Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Trey Gibson.
You didn't tell me about this.
Happy birthday to you. Surprise, man. You thought I was going to do my collision noise.
I did not see this one coming. I got to be honest.
Happy birthday, bro.
Ah, thanks, man. All right. Oh, man. Now I have no idea where we go with this. that's the flow.
Well, this is the podcast where experience and knowledge
education collide to take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is February the 14th. It is Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day.
Our topic for today is, Jeff, I'm going to try to get this. Our topic for today is roses are red. Being a parent is a blast. Make sure that you listen to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. I totally messed that up, but it worked.
You got it.
It rhymed. It still rhymed. So yeah, we'll run with that. All right, guys. So yeah, our topic for today is going to be we're going to talk a little bit about Valentine's Day, and it's a little thematic today, but we're going to have a little fun with the idea of the theme of Valentine's Day today. But also we're going to get a little serious in talking about what is it when we talk about the ideas of love. How can we take Valentine's Day from something that is just about selling, materialistic. Great set of words there. Materialistic. It's about buying stuff and cards and chocolates, candies, and roses. And how can we bring some level of meaningfulness to Valentine's Day? And how can we make something that kids actually look forward to outside of the fact that they're going to get 1,000 little Valentine's Day card from everybody else that all have about the same exact thing on them? How can we bring something special to that? So Jeff's actually put together a fantastic show. We're going to talk a little bit about that here in just a minute. Before we get into that, guys, let's jump into some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to stay notified of all the new episodes of the Real Family Guys podcast, simple, easy way to do that. Jump over to the Family Podcast over on the right-hand side and your name and your email address. When you do that, you get put onto a special email list that lets you know every single time we put out a new show. It says, hey, we got a new show. Here's what we talked about. We do that to make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just could have heard, it could have changed everything. Facebook and Twitter have not been reliable in that. And so we wanted to make sure that you guys have a free way that you can sign up, do that. And we do not overwhelm you guys with emails every single week. Guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, something you want to hear Jeff and I talk about, or a topic that you want us to go over, there's a lot of simple ways you can do that. You can always email us the topic if you find it like on Facebook or something like that. You're out and about reading a blog. You can email that to us, TreyGibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com or Jeff@texasfamilyinstitute.org. You can always send those there. If you guys want to actually ask us a direct question, you can call us. A lot of ways that you can do that. Number one, let's say you don't have a phone with you. Hey, no problem. All you got to do is go to The Family Podcast. Over on the right-hand side, you'll see a little bar that says, Ask Trey and Jeff a question. Whenever you click on that, it will allow you to record a voicemail right over your phone, even if you don't have a phone line connected at that moment. In other words, you haven't actually called our call-in line. That's no problem. You can leave it right over that with your phone. Ask your question. You can do it over your computer as long as you have a microphone on that as well. Ask your question. Make sure you ask your question first, then give us the details at the end, and we'll see about getting that answered on the show. You guys can always call us. Like, let's say, well, Trey, I don't have a computer right now, or I don't want to have access to that. I'm driving. I'm just dropping my kids off at school or something like that. Just give us a call. 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT and the number 0. Call us on your phone, and you can leave us a message. Whenever you do that, you won't hear Jeff and I answer saying, hey, this is Jeff and Trey on the Real Family Guys podcast. What's your question? You will get a voicemail that will allow you to record your question directly to it. Make sure that you kind of rehearse your question, guys. If you give us too long of one, we are not going to air it on the show. With all of that out of the way, guys, let's jump into our topic for today. Once again, our topic is roses are red. Being a parent is a blast. So now you need to listen to the Real Family Guys podcast. Jeff, what are we talking about, man?
Man, that's just a great piece of poetry right there. I think it'll go down with the sonnets of Shakespeare. And, you know, just real. Yeah,
he made it up. He's making it sound like it was me. It was his idea. So
it's good stuff. No, hey, man, I am excited about today's podcast. We do have some great information, but you know, we normally just kind of do a check in, see how things are going. Last week we kind of left everybody with a little teaser that we were going to talk about Valentine's Day stuff today, being, you know, that our podcast actually falls on Valentine's Day, so it worked out really well. But I got to tell you, Trey, the talk in our office has been about Valentine's Day, about doing something special, and People have different opinions about Valentine's Day. Some people really enjoy it as a time that they get to do something special for their sweetie. And then there's people that, for various reasons, just don't like it. So I'm wondering, we'll talk about our own opinions here in a little bit, but what's the general mood around your office? Because I know that you work with you're not by yourself. You have a bunch of people that you interact with every day. So what kind of things are you guys talking about? You know, people talking about having dates or doing something special or anything like that?
You know, really, there has been very little talk, especially considering I work in a place that has so many ladies in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think you would hear that, but I have heard virtually nothing. I've seen no decorative paraphernalia around the office or anything like that. Nobody put out Valentine's, you know, candies that I saw. And so it's really been pretty quiet. I feel like I've actually, and I am not, and well, again, we'll get into our personal opinions here in just a minute. I feel like I've actually been the one who has been the most, like, advocating. Like, you know, I've got a group of guys that work for me. And so, you know, about a week out, I was telling every one of them, listen, guys, if you haven't made your reservation somewhere, do it. Now, mm-hmm. I don't care if your reservations or you order them some flowers and you have those delivered or you go pick them up at Walmart, you know, the night before or whatever. But, you know, I mean, you need to have something done, you know, for your sweetie. Because let me tell you, Jeff, you hear me? Mm-hmm. I have made the mistake of thinking that Valentine's Day is just my birthday one time in my life.
and not made that mistake again.
And it never happened again.
Well, I'll tell you, the reservations I have about Valentine's Day are moral outrage and stuff like that. I'm actually kind of a bah humbug. Not dinner reservations anywhere, but just I'm one of those guys that falls in the camp of gift giving is not necessarily my love language. And when I feel like I'm backed in the corner or made to do it for a reason other than genuine sincerity, I get kind of resistant.
You push back.
Yeah. I don't know. I watched an episode of on a TV show called Last Man Standing. It's a new Tim Allen comedy. The Valentine's Day episode of that show was pretty funny because Tim Allen plays the dad in the show, and he's kind of a curmudgeon about Valentine's Day too. And so he and his wife have been married like 25 years, and for 25 years she's listened to him complain about how it's a holiday made up by greeting card companies to extort money from men, and stuff like that. And he's real bah humbug about it and everything. But his practical joke on this one is that he actually buys his wife a bouquet and has it delivered to the house. Unfortunately, the card falls off of it at the beginning of the show before the guy delivers it. And so they show up and everybody in the house besides him is female. He's got a wife and three daughters. And so all of them are like, well, who's this from? And nobody believes that it's from him. And of course, he doesn't say anything about it because he doesn't want to give it away. But the whole show revolves around the misadventures of what Valentine's Day means. And he's really glad about it because he's like, this is the ultimate revenge. Nobody is going to expect that, I mean, with how I've been talking about it for years and years, that I would actually give in and spend money. So this is the ultimate trick. She'll be surprised on a day when flowers would not surprise anybody because everyone expects to get flowers. She doesn't expect to get flowers. It's like it's like Inception. You know, he goes in and plants this idea. So anyhow, I'm kind of like that I may complain and gripe about things, but I also recognize the wisdom of what you were saying just a minute ago that there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure to do something that symbolizes your love, that represents your love, even if it's not extravagant. And if you miss out on it, all behavior is communication. So the behavior of giving in will say one thing, but the behavior of ignoring it can say exactly the wrong thing, that you don't care about the other person. So
I have said that one time. I said that one time in my marriage.
what happened?
Well, so you said that sometimes when you forget those kinds of things, it's communicating something, right? You say something. I mean, so I was just making a comment. I've said that one time by forgetting. Like I said, it wasn't even necessarily forgetting, but like, you know, Valentine's Day in my house was never a big deal because it was always Trey's birthday. And so, you know, my dad would bring roses or something like that, but there was very little to do made about it. And so I tried to bring that methodology, and I can't even begin to try to express how unlike my wife that is. I mean, she had birthdays forgotten by her family as a kid. We're talking like 9, 10, 11-year-old kid. I mean, just literally completely forgot that year. And a year later, like, you know, a year after that birthday, they remembered they had forgotten it kind of thing. I mean, we're talking some potentially heavy. So she grew up with that. And for her, that was a reality. She actually thought that was a normative, you know, like she thought that was norm for families. And that's kind of the way it went. And so when she experienced other families and whatnot, I mean, it was a very big experience for her. And that was just one of those ones that – I don't think my wife, for instance, places like a huge significance on Valentine's Day in and of itself, but I think she does place it, you know, in terms of there being a day that's kind of about relationship building, and whether it be just, you know, roses or something like that. She's not a candy lady. She doesn't like that kind of stuff, but she mm-hmm. loves roses because it's very plant like, and she loves plants and things like that. And she likes to go do something special, you know, for those days. And so anyway, I've learned my wife, dadgummit.
Well, and we do learn from different things. So maybe we'll be able to inspire some people to take something away from this podcast today that will help them grow deeper in their relationships with their kids, with their spouse. So let's go ahead and jump into it, Trey. All right, we want to start off with this article, just as kind of a teaser to talking about stuff. This is from The Blaze, which is reportedly a news aggregate, I guess. I don't know. It's nothing like Time or Newsweek or anything like that, but it's The Blaze. And they posted this article that kind of caught my eye. It's called, let's see, the title of the article is "What This Teacher's Alleged Valentine's Day Letter Says to Parents Has People Calling It Pathetic and Too Politically Correct." Now, the headline is clickbait. I mean, they want people to, ooh, what could it possibly have said? Actually, this is pretty standard stuff. I mean, I've got three kids and they've all come through the schools. Basically, what it says is it's a kindergarten newsletter that goes out to parents. And it basically says, hey, parents, Valentine's Day is a fun time. The kids are excited about it. So what we're going to do is we're going to exchange these cards. And what we want you to do, there's 16 kids in the class. Make sure that if your kid brings one, they bring one for everybody. And this is the part that people are kind of getting weird about, is for kindergarten, don't put any names on the cards. That way it's easier for the kids to pass them out, and nobody will have hurt feelings.
Yeah.
All right. So this article has a bunch of people reacting to it, saying, oh, this is pathetic. This is like everybody gets a trophy and you don't have to hurt anybody's feelings. And one commenter on it said, call me crazy, but aren't hurt feelings a good thing sometimes? Rejection helps you learn and grow stronger regardless of the – well, I don't know. So I thought we'd start off talking a little bit about that. And I know that you guys are primarily homeschooling and everything, but did you ever do the whole Valentine's Day card exchange thing? Or is that a pretty common thing that everyone's experienced? I know that I did growing up, even in Department of Defense schools overseas. We usually had a day where we had a cardboard, like we'd make our own box and bring a shoebox or something, and we'd decorate it and cut a hole in the top, and that was going to be our mailbox for Valentine's Day. And I mean, I did that in, man, almost every grade in elementary school. So it seems like a pretty common thing to me. Is this news to you?
Oh, yeah, man. We had the same level of stuff, especially in the younger grades, you know, the little bitty grades all the way up until, like, you know, fifth and sixth grade. Yeah, this was a huge deal. Card exchange was a big deal. You know, I actually connected with what you said about making the little mailboxes, and, you know, we would make them out of shoeboxes and hang them off our desks or something like that, and people could come dropping by. Now, doing it the way this lady describes it, no, we did not do it that way. There wasn't, like, you know, that everybody had to put it together, you know, and really, in all truthfully, you actually read that. You read that part of it.
Right, right.
And, you know, and like, with that, with what she did, I don't necessarily have, like, an explicit problem with it, especially with littler kids. Yeah, I do agree that as they get older, there comes a level where people have to be responsible for the relationships they build with people. And I mean, if you're getting your self-esteem from every single person in the class giving you one, and if you have, you know, right, you know, you don't have every single person in there, or maybe you don't even have half of the entire class in there, and you're, like, feeling good about yourself is dependent on how many of those things that you get. You know, I mean, that's a deal. Now, I understand that. I think a lot of this probably comes in response to the fact that sometimes people, I mean, I've seen kids that would manipulate this kind of thing, who wouldn't give these things as a way to bully in their own way. I mean, they were a way to be emotionally, you know, mean to people by not giving them one. So it wasn't like they didn't give one because they're not close to them, or they just forgot, or any of that kind of stuff. It was a deliberate, I'm not going to give this one to you because I know it's going to hurt you. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, I understand. I understand where people come for this. I understand why this teacher made this. Do I completely agree with what she did? I mean, gosh, I don't know. I mean, to me, this takes, like you were saying earlier, you said that very eloquently, it takes the special out of this. You know, I mean, the neat part about this is the individual little things mm-hmm. that you can say, and getting to write those things to people, and already Valentine's Day kind of seems to, at least this card passing stuff, already kind of seems to be cheapened a little bit because we're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, watered down. Great way to put it.
Yeah.
And then this just kind of seems to add another shot of distilled water to it because now it's not even that. Now it's got to all be uniformed, and it's got to be, you know, benchmarked here, and mm-hmm. it's all got to be exactly the same. And, you know, little kids, though, I don't think they're going to give a – I mean, they're not going to care. They're not going to give a crap about that, you know. I don't know.
Well, and the fact that this is on the kindergarten level is something yeah. that, you know, if they were doing this and it was like high school and, okay, it would be a story. Why are you forcing high schoolers to do something like that? I mean, I can see it being a bit of a news story if it was at an inappropriate age or something like that. But yeah. in kindergarten, you know, inclusiveness is something that, and sharing toys and things like that, those are our social skills sure. that they're learning. Yeah. So I don't really have a problem with it at this level. I'll tell you what I do have a problem with, Trey. Hmm. And this is something that that is going to go right along with that curmudgeon thing I was telling you about earlier that that I do with some holidays when I feel like I'm forced to do stuff. When my kids were going through pre-K and kindergarten, it wasn't the fact that they had to give Valentine's to everybody in their class that got on my nerves. It was actually something that I think was well-intentioned but ended up getting under my skin anyhow. And that was that the PTO, the parent-teacher organization at my kid's school, had a fundraiser. And I am all for PTO fundraisers. And I [S2] Sure. [S1] Mean, they do great things. They provide playground equipment to the schools. I mean, we have a great PTO. But their fundraiser was actually to parents. They sent a note home. They said, listen, Valentine's Day is coming up. Every kid or every class is going to have a some sort of little party. What you can do as a parent, if you'd like to, as a PTO fundraiser, is for $1, we will take a balloon to class and say this is a Valentine from mommy and daddy. That you can leave a note with a balloon. For $3, you can get a balloon and a for $3, you can get a little teddy bear. And for $5, you can get a balloon and a teddy bear to go with this card, right? Okay, now for $1, that's really pretty cheap. You can do something and tell your kid that you love them, and it's a gesture in front of the other kids. And what kid does not like to have a little helium balloon bouncing around all over them? But this is like a visual way of if your kid doesn't end up with a balloon or a bear or both, what kind of parent are you, right? So there's a lot of pressure here. And I hated it. Yeah. That stuff about being backed into a corner and made to do something. I was like, man, I don't mind doing something for my kid, but I don't like being kind of forced into looking like a terrible parent because I'm unwilling to shovel out a buck.
Yeah. You know?
So that really got under my skin, and so it actually had a pretty good effect on me, Jay, because what I ended up doing was trying to find some way to connect with my kids before the day. I knew it was coming, and so I'd kind of prep them. I'd be like, all right, listen, it's school today. You're going to see other kids with balloons. That doesn't mean that their parents love them more than your parents love them. I said, how about after school, you know, I'll pick you guys up and we'll go get ice cream. That's better than anything, right? And even though I'm spending more money on it, I'm not doing it the way that they, you know, so I get to rebel in my own way, even though I'm kind of caving to the whole system anyhow. So the upside of this is that it allowed me to be intentional about telling my kids that I care about them. And when it comes down to it, that's something that I want to do not only on Valentine's Day, but all the time. And so what I take away from this is the same way I take away Christmas. We don't celebrate Christmas as a religious holiday. It's a national holiday. It's a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of commercialism and greed and other stuff. And so I try to do things my own way, but I found that when I'm backed into a corner, it helps me to be intentional about how I want to be as a parent and the message that I want to send to my kids. And so that's where I think that we can actually be really proactive as parents, whether we're giving them a gift or whether we're giving them verbal affirmation. I think Valentine's Day is a great time for us to be able to find special ways to celebrate the good relationship that we have with our children and to help them feel valued and cared for.
Well, you know, I was thinking about what you were talking about there too. And you know, the reality is that, you know, can you take Valentine's Day and all of the I love that phrasing you used, watered down traditions and stuff like that and re-engender meaning behind them? Yeah, absolutely you can. Can you even take exactly what they're doing in some cases and engender those behind it? I'm kind of with you. I'm a little bit of a rebel, right? And so mm-hmm. I'm probably bumping into my must-be-seen-as box when it comes to my dad, and I would do the same thing as you. I mean, if you know, that's the beautiful thing about homeschooling, but you know, outside of that, they don't get all the thousands of cool, you know, little messages from kids like they would if they were in a public school. But you know what? I would probably do the same thing you did. I would probably buck the system and be like, screw that, man. I'm going to go and, you know, get them something awesome. I'm going to get them big toy or something. Ha ha! Stink on right. that Valentine's Day. You know, that's kind of the mentality I would take to it. But, you know, it got me thinking about that. Is there a way that you can do certain things Is there a way that you can bring the meaning back into these little small things? Absolutely, absolutely. And we're going to go on and talk a little bit about that later today. But you know, I'll be with you. I mean, I'm kind of on your team with this. You know, I walked into this with kind of a bah humbug mentality because,
right.
You know, I mean, outside of that fact, I acknowledge Valentine's Day for what it is. It's that one opportunity that I get a lot of people that remind me before it happens that I need to be ready to go love on my wife for a little
right.
bit, right?
Yeah, that's
and that's great. I love that. People are going to remind me this is coming, right? And so there's no getting, no forgetting about it, whatnot. I mean, it's on the map, right? It's on your calendar. But right. I kind of walk into it with kind of a stale approach because it's like, meh, you know, I mean, it's a big meh thing for me. And so you're actually reminding me about it. So you're probably putting my heart in the right place by what you're saying too, because there's a reminder here that I can engender my own traditions, my own beliefs, my own perspectives. I can put love back into Valentine's Day for my kids, even if I choose not to do all of the same avenues that they traditionally suggest I do it.
That's absolutely right, and I like what you were saying about creating traditions, and that's actually a great transition. The other article that I found on the internet that I really want to highlight, or that we, I guess, speaking for both of us from the Real Family Guys podcast, want to highlight is one that was posted over at Psych Central by Marie Hartwell Walker, who is a doctor of education, and she wrote a wonderful article that talks about Valentine's Day and parental love, and it's actually a really interesting thing. She started. Starts off by pointing out that approximately 40% of the 180 million Valentine's Day cards
that
are going to be purchased this year are going to be bought by
parents. Fascinating.
Yeah, you know, so 40%, we think about
crazy.
That's huge, right? That's almost half of the entire total is coming from parents to kids, and so I mean, when we hear about Valentine's Day, we typically think about romantic love and not necessarily familial love, and so Valentine's Day is that day where, like you said, we get to love on our sweetie, you know, our spouses, our significant others, but love is love is love, and if we want to teach our kids something about Valentine's Day, then we have an opportunity here, and capitalizing on that by creating a tradition, even if it's outside the norm, allows us to be intentional about things, and so that's what she recommends in this article is exactly what you were saying, is that that we have an opportunity to do something that helps our kids feel cared about and valued, because even though February 14th is, you know, it's just another day. It's a special day because of the focus that the world puts on it. And so she points out that the kids who get daily deposits in their emotional bank accounts are kids that are able to develop and sustain resilience to be able to manage stress. They're kids who have the emotional vocabulary necessary to be able to identify their emotions and make good romantic choices. Oh my goodness. And that's huge. I can't tell you. a good percentage of the couples counseling I do is because people are locked into relationships that maybe they shouldn't have gotten in the first place, but now they're stuck and there's a kid involved or something like that. So making good romantic choices is something absolutely that I want my kids to be able to do, you know? And you know, being able to help our kids feel cared for and valued helps them become adults who are able to work through rough spots and find good relationships and whose self esteem is strong enough to get out of a bad relationship if they get in one. So
I'm gonna be frank with you, Jeff. Here, I mean, as you're talking too, I'm actually kind of getting schooled here a little bit, and I'm taking a lesson here from what you're saying too, because of my mentality again. Well, I already expressed that. I already said what my mentality's been, but you know, you're actually bringing together a good point that I hadn't even considered with my kids. Why don't I use it as an opportunity to say, hey, this is Valentine's Day. This is kind of what it's about. This is what people celebrate. And then there's that wonderful question. What do you think love is? One of my favorite questions to ask anybody is, what do you think love is, right? Because we, you know, Corey and I have a fairly non-traditional view, at least not, it's not the commonly accepted, definition of love.
I'm excited because I in my counseling, I've found a definition that works so well for me that I didn't come up with it. Another guy did, but it's awesome. And I ask a lot of my couples, how do you define love? And you and I have actually never, I don't think this has ever actually come up, a definition of love. What is it that you and Corey have worked out?
We actually define love as it's not actually an emotion. In our household, we actually firmly believe that love is not directly, at least I should say,
sure.
It is not directly linked to an actual emotion. It's actually a choice. And that love is, so like we always argue this idea to say, well, I mean, have you ever seen somebody who's been married for 30, 40 years, right? And you say, oh, yeah, sure. If you were to sit down and ask them, do you feel exactly the same way that you did when you first got married as you do at this very point? I've never met a couple that I've asked that question to, and I have asked tons of people that question. I've never got one that said, yeah, we feel exactly the same. Hmm. There may be elements of that. There may be pieces of that that are still similar, but they say, no, it's very different. And so then I would ask, you know, the people that I'm talking to about this, I'd say, so you're telling me that they don't love each other anymore? Well, of course not. That's not what that's about. So the mentality comes to it is that we say that love is that choice to do the right thing with the other person, regardless of what you're feeling or what's going on. Love is just that choice to do the right thing. And some people will say that deromanticizes it because it removes the emotion. I say bull crud, man. That is the complete opposite. If you can remove an emotional component, at least the topsy-turvy part of the emotional component out of love, and make it about doing a choice to do the right thing, I think that creates a stability. I think it creates long life in marriages. I think it creates a healthiness that goes well beyond what the emotional component that ebbs and flows and comes and goes. I mean, to me, that is romance there. And that ability to see somebody and have admiration and respect, and hopefully they light the fire, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, those 10, 30, 20, 50 years later, that's what you want. And I think it's that fundamental choice that we have to make. And so, you know, what a good opportunity to talk to kids and say, what do you think love is? Let's get them. They may not even have a good answer for it yet. I can guarantee you that my 4-year-old daughter, Cora, is probably not going to have they have blown my socks off sometimes.
Yeah, but she might.
More often than not, their answers are like, oh, okay, yeah, good for trying. All right, let's keep going. Right. And so, but what a good opportunity to bring that up and get them thinking about it.
Well, I love the fact that you guys have given it some thought and that you have found a way to say it in a way that you can do it at a developmental level and talk to your kids about love being a choice and how we choose to treat people and doing the right thing. What I find in counseling is that folks come to me when their relationship is not where it needs to be. And when we start talking about love and I hear them throwing the word around, and this just, I cringe inside when people say something like, I love her, but I'd do anything for them, but and I'm like, wow, okay. So a while ago, I said, love shouldn't have any buts. You know, it's like, I love them, but okay, love has too many buts. If that's your and so there's this idea of love being unconditional, and what I found is when I ask people that same question, it's like, all right, if you had to put it in a sentence or two, give me a definition of the word love. And people stammer around it and they give examples and this and that. And, mm-hmm. and I rarely find somebody who's given enough thought. We all think that we know what love is, but the fact is our idea and our definition of love is informed by our experiences and our family of origin and our ups and our downs and what we've read and what we've seen in the movies. And so when I'm doing counseling with a couple, I've got his definition of love based on what he grew up feeling and seeing and experiencing. And then I've got her definition of love, which is what she grew up experiencing and seeing. And to top it all off, I've got my definition of love. So we have three maybe overlapping, maybe dissimilar ways of talking about love. Yeah. So we're not all on the same page. So what I typically do is I tell them, all right, for the purposes of counseling, we're going to use this definition, and full credit where credit's due. I did not come up with this, Trey, but it is an amazing definition that encapsulates what you were talking about, that love being a choice, because sometimes people say, well, love's a feeling, and well, okay, but feelings change. It is a feeling, but it's not just a feeling. Well, love's a behavior. Well, that's true. It is behavior, but it's also an attitude. Okay, well, it's an attitude, but it's also – so, you know, there's a lot of different ways that we kind of try to get at it without being able to pin it down. It's like trying to nail Jell-O to a wall. What's love to you? What's love to me, right? And when we don't have a common definition, we end up miscommunicating our love, which leads to a lot of other problems. So here's the credit where credit's due. A guy who wrote the book that I got it from is called Hope Focused Marriage Counseling by Everett Worthington. Okay. He's a doctor who studies relationship counseling. He wrote a great book, but his definition of love that he puts in the book is one that's just blown me away. Here it is. Love is valuing the other person and refusing to devalue the other person. I'm saying it again.
Okay.
Love is valuing the other person and refusing to devalue the other person. The reason that I like it is because it captures what you were talking about, it about love being a choice, right? That that I can choose to value the other person by my behaviors and by my attitude. I can choose not. I can refuse to devalue them, which is in itself a loving behavior. And loving attitude, right? So there's that choice piece. Mm-hmm. And then there's the feelings piece, right? Of valuing the other. I know what it feels like to be cared for and valued. And so if I understand that, what can I do to help the other person feel that way, right? And so it captures the feeling element, but it captures not just the behavior, it also captures the attitude, because I can't value the other person with my behavior and devalue them with my attitude. It just doesn't work.
Right. Okay.
So anyhow, it becomes a very functional definition of love, because if they come in the next week and say, well, we argued this week, he called me a cheapskate and I called him a spendthrift, and that got us into a big argument. I was like, all right, so calling each other names, you may say that you love each other, but in that moment, that behavior, is that a loving behavior according to our definition? No, because we're devaluing the other person and we know we're doing it, right? So you may say that you love the other person, but your behavior is contradicting what you're saying, right? So love can't just be words. Anyhow, so I love your definition. Love is a choice. And that's absolutely part of how I think of it as well. So I think we're kind of on the same page here, but
well,
I like the way that you've been able to tell it to your kids and incorporate it into your family values of choosing to do the right thing. That's awesome.
Well, you know, even as you said that too, I actually admit to a level of shortcoming in my definition there, because the reality, and I got to thinking about this when you said it, but the reality being is that you can make the right choice, but you can do it for the wrong motivations.
If
I'm being kind to Corey and I'm you know, making a reservation at Perini Ranch, which is out here where we're at, a very big high ritzy place, so that they featured their hamburger on the Today Show a while back. So if I go and make it because, well, if I don't, she's gonna kill me, right? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that's the right choice, right? As love is a choice. Did I choose the right thing? Yeah, I probably did. But, you know, bringing in the attitude part is the motivational piece of that, is how I define that. And you're right. You know, you're exactly right. Can you do the right behaviors for the wrong reasons with the wrong motivation and seeing a person as an object? Yeah, you bring in that into light, and you're exactly right. And so bringing in the attitude piece to it, I think, is absolutely – I'm going to have to go take that definition and we're going to have to go take it back to the smelting pot and recast that. But again, you're exactly right. It's about doing the right thing for the right motivation and the right reason behind it. I want to show that you're meaningful, you're valuable to me. Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, we're going to take that back to the board.
Well, I got to tell you, Trey, anything that sounds smart coming out of my mouth is something I probably learned from somebody else. So
yeah, understood. No, I agree.
That's good stuff here. So how can we take this definition and be able to turn it into traditions where we're able to do this with our kids and take it out of the romantic realm, which is fine and good. We need to treat our spouses and our significant others that way. But when it comes to treating our kids, how can we value them and refuse to devalue them in ways that are meaningful? And especially on this day when the world is focused on, you know, on showing love, well, how can we be intentional about doing it? So I'm just curious, Trey, and we didn't talk about this before the show, so this is kind of spur of the moment, but what are some ways that that you've interacted with your kids in a special way that that you've made them feel cared for and valued, or maybe they've done for you that has made you feel cared for and valued that you could duplicate on an event like Valentine's Day?
You know, one of the things that I've been really, I guess maybe I'm going to say the word conviction here, and I don't necessarily, for me, it is a religious context here. I don't necessarily mean it full in that context, but I've experienced a level of connection that I have, like, for instance, I've been walking motions with my kids. I've been playing with them like I'm supposed to, again, going back to that choice, but my motivations weren't necessarily, they were about filling quota. And so the last few weeks, I've really been spending time on discussing with my kids and spending more time, first off, playing with them. Not just playing, but playing with them. I'm in the room. I'm connected. You know, we're connecting on a fun, emotional level as well, and we're talking and we're interacting. And so it's not just me playing hide and seek, but it's playing hide and seek and being silly with them and make them giggling even though they're, you know, they're hiding, right? And they can't stop laughing because they hear daddy coming being funny. So there's that connection piece of it. So one of the things I've really been trying to do, and I think it's even, we may even talk some about this tomorrow, is about being connected with each other. And that love is not just doing. I mean, this is. I'm actually kind of writing a lesson that my kids and I are going to have a talk about tomorrow. As we're going through this, I'm learning as much as everybody listening today. But we're going to talk a little bit about how love is not just the action that we walk through, but it's also the connection that we make with that person when we do it. And which again, for us, I mean, that aligns perfectly with my belief system that love is also about finding the language that people receive. And you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
And you know, gifts not being, you know, gift giving is not one of your love languages you send in. But we're going to talk a little bit about that too. And so that's one of the things I think I'm going to use tomorrow to help kind of sweeten it up a little bit and make it a little more meaningful, is we're going to talk about it's not just about doing things for people. It's also about the motivation behind it. It's good.
Like I said, my love language is not necessarily gift giving, but I got to tell you that there have been some things that my kids have given me, even if it's last minute stuff, even if it's like, today's your birthday. And then they run into the room and they find some little thing and come out, daddy, I want you to have this, because, you know, I that's the sort of stuff that just makes my heart melt and it makes me feel, you know, all gooey and stuff like that. So I like doing things with my kids, and I like going to places with them and spending time with them.
Yeah.
And then when I do that, being able to connect with them and try and talk to them about, or not necessarily talk with them, but I do a lot of talking a lot of the time. Instead, in those moments, I try to be a better listener, you know, and to ask good questions, things like, instead of, you know, how was your day, you know, picking up from school, I mean, ask them a question that's going to get them opening up and talking to me. Tell me something fantastic that happened to you today. Or, you know, what was something you did today for another person that made you? And that way they're thinking about it. And the question itself is something that makes them think, wow, he really wants to know something specific about me, right? So anyhow, I'm just thinking about on Valentine's Day, you know, cards are sweet, but a handwritten note that is not something that you buy from the store is more meaningful to me. I'm thinking, I don't know if anybody can hear me. I think everyone's asleep. I'm thinking in the morning, I'm going to try and get up a little bit early and make some heart-shaped pancakes and just do breakfast with my kids before we send them out the door.
Yeah.
It's something I don't get to do. Normally our mornings are rushing around and busy and other stuff. So.
Stink on that $1 balloon.
That's right, man. So let's dive back in here before we spend too much time chasing rabbits here. Let's dive back into this article from Psych Central, because she actually has a great little acrostic in here to help us remember some of the stuff that we advocate here on the Real Family Guys podcast and just some good information. She says that you know, for a lot of us parents, loving our kids is second nature. It's what we do, right? But others didn't come from well-loved backgrounds themselves, and so it's a little bit more challenging. So she takes the acrostic, which is the first letter, or the letters of a word makes them the first letter of a little memory thing here. And she says, here's some basics of parenting that goes with the word love, L-O-V-E. All right. So some good stuff to remember as we're trying to create traditions and stuff with our kids is, in general parenting, L stands for set loving limits, right? And not just limiting our kids for the sake of convenience, because I'm too lazy to be a good parent, you know, so I don't want to, you know, but loving limits, right? I think that a lot of parents, have the idea that, love means letting your kid do whatever they want. And that's just flat wrong. No. That's not what it's about. In fact, our kids need to feel safe in order to be able to explore the world and to grow in a safe way. And so, as they grow, being aware of what they're able to do and what they can't do and setting loving limits for them is a way to give them some structure so they just feel safe to grow and make decisions, right? Loving without limits teaches them that the world owes them a living, right? They feel entitled to get what they want without respecting the others' rights. But giving limits that are done well provide safety for kids and show what is and what isn't acceptable behavior. Mm-hmm. And setting loving limits, that love part is the ingredient that determines whether those limits are about teaching our kids or about controlling them.
Yes,
we talked about that before.
Good. Yeah,
good. We don't want our kids to grow up feeling like they've been controlled, but rather that they have an opportunity to grow and learn. And that's what setting loving limits is about.
You know, I think this is a great point to bring up too. I love the ideology of limits too, because some of the best lessons that kids can walk out with. In other words, what I mean by that is that some of the lessons that kids can walk out of our homes that lead them to a life that is successful, and I'm talking just overwhelmingly successful. It involves limits. Like one of the ones that we've been working on, and I was thinking just the other day about how this is about loving on our kids. But you know, we don't when we go to the store, we don't buy our kids anything. You know, oh, Dad, mm-hmm. I want a pack of gum. You know, oh, Dad, I want this toy and all that stuff. Oh, Dad, can we just go buy one of these? Dad, can we grab, you know, Burger King on the way home? Mm-hmm. Or, don't get me wrong. I say that. We'll get food and things like that in most cases, unless it's some kind of special thing, like they want to get ice cream at Dairy Queen or something. Mm-hmm. But we tell them no. In our first question, we never say no. We always ask them, do you have the money for that? Do you have the money? See, that's a limit that we're drawing there.
Right.
Now, you know, a kid could argue, oh, my God, you don't want us to have the horrible things, you know. But, you know, the overarching reasoning behind that is that we're trying to teach our kids one fundamental belief system about money and about work. We got to work hard to play hard. Mm-hmm. And that's what the entire mentality is about, is that if we can teach them that, sure, you want nice things, you want awesome stuff, you want to get to that point where you don't feel like you're entitled to those things, but you still want them, I've got to show you that it comes from hard work. Good money always comes from hard work. And I'm not saying like dumb, you know, you don't have to like go out into the oil field and work thousands of billions of hours, but I'm just, you gotta work hard. You gotta put time and effort into it. And so, you know, but that's that idea that love is not just opening them up and giving them free rein to pick whatever they want from life. at any time that they want. It's about teaching them. We have to work for things. Or, you know, there's a whole other set, you know, a host of limits that we can set with kids, but it's a huge thing. Jeff and I were always a part of a company called New Horizons, and they always had, you remember the phrase, Jeff?
Love kids and limit kids.
And then help them succeed. I mean, that's help the idea behind, the idea behind it was, if you want a kid to succeed, you got to love them, but you got to limit them. Those go hand in hand. They are, I don't know, fraternal twins, identical twins.
Well, the whole idea behind it is, especially New Horizons, is there were kids that were coming out of homes where they had been abused, neglected, and largely left to make adult decisions by themselves. And I got to tell you, when you're a little kid and your decision could affect your world, that's an unsafe thing. I mean, kids need to know that their decisions, especially at younger developmental levels, when they're not ready to make heavy adult decisions, but they're having to make decisions about whether or not they're going to have food to eat the next day, right?
Yeah.
That's heavy stuff, and it traumatizes a kid. And so setting limits means creating a safe environment for them. And so a lot of kids had to learn that coming into the program that we had for them, is they didn't have any limits. And so at first they rebelled from it because they thought that we're setting limits on them because we hated them. And that's absolutely not the truth. It's because we loved them, right? And we need to adjust those limits as a child grows, as their sense of responsibility grows, then our ability to, our limiting of them needs to get looser and looser so that they can take more and more responsibility.
Yeah, self-governing, right. Yeah, that's right.
All right, so this little acrostic L stands for loving limits, and then O in her article here, she says O stands for observing.
That's
right?
Good,
and that's absolutely true. She says that the most frequently repeated phrase of normal childhood is "Look at me, look at me," and that's absolutely true. If you have ever gone out to a playground where a bunch of kids are playing, on the jungle gym, running around chasing each other, you will hear them over and over: "Mom, mom, mom, dad, mom, dad, dad, look, look, look." Yeah. Look. Almost as if, and I joke about this, I call it quantum theory in parenting.
I've always loved
because
that.
Quantum physics says that when you observe a thing, it changes something, right? And so if you didn't observe it happen, it didn't happen, right? And I think our kids feel that way sometimes. If mom or dad isn't watching me, it's not worth doing, right? I got to have somebody watching what I'm doing. Look at me, look at me. And so when you extrapolate that, at different developmental levels, at the younger levels, our kids want us to physically be observing them, watching them with our eyes and giving them feedback, right? But I think even at older levels, that sometimes our teens, even though they're withdrawing and developing a sense of privacy and things like that, that they don't want to feel invisible. And I think that at some point for a lot of kids, they feel that their parents don't see them. And so just being present and observing things with your kids and noticing things about your kids helps them to feel validated and understood and known. And that's really important.
Well, you know, there's a kind of a philosophy of belief that's real prevalent over the Family Podcast Network, but we engender it here when we talk at the Real Family Guys podcast too. But, you know, one of the best things that I think you can do as a parent is stop being concerned about what needs you're getting met personally, and you begin to start focusing on what objectives and what needs does other people have that I can help them being a part of. And I mean, there's not a person out there that doesn't love to be noticed, that doesn't like it whenever we do those things right and we get acknowledged for it. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand there's differences in like introversion and extroversion. And some people don't like to have a big, you know, they don't want to be thrown up in the shoulders and paraded through an office or something like that to get that acknowledgement. But they like it when somebody leaves them a note or shoots them an email of appreciation, comes by the office, two or three people, you know, mention it in their room. And that's because those are people that are focused outwards. And a lot of what we're talking about here is an internal thing, I think, as a parent. And so, you know, kids need us to see them. And the only way, we have a tendency as parents, if we're not careful, that we become very inwardly focused. I'm focused on my objectives.
Right.
And so when we're focused on our objectives, we're not looking outwards. And I mean that metaphorically, and I mean that literally, physically. We're not looking outward because we're too, and guys, I'm raising my hand I do this crap too, but we're so focused on whatever it is on Facebook, in our hands, on our phone, and our iPhones, as we're sitting there tapping around on them, right? When our kids are desperate, dad, dad, dad. Dad, look, mom, right? You know, we're focused on our inward objectives. And so a large piece of what we're talking about here today, the ability to love, is looking past ourselves and getting to the point where we acknowledge that, you know, the real success for our kids, really them feeling very much love, is that we've got to be able to see outside of ourselves and see what are our kids needing. Because if a kid, it's like this author who writes this just so eloquently words it, but when kids feel invisible to their parents, I mean, it messes with them. And either they withdraw to themselves and they just kind of implode on themselves, or they explode. And they do things specifically to upset us. I mean, really, they do. They're trying to upset us
because their behavior comes out.
Kids would rather have our negative observe, so sticking with this O for observe, kids would rather see for us to be observing them negatively than to not be seen at all.
That's right. That's right. But when we're able to look at our kids and watch them and observe them, and they know that they're being observed, and especially when they succeed, then it helps them to want to keep mastering new things and becoming confident that they can be their best selves. And that's honestly the best way. That's the mentality I want my kids to have, is that they want me to catch them being their best self rather than the worst self. Right. All right, so L is for loving limits. O is for observing. She says V is for verbalizing our love. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this is where it really kind of fits in with Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day is the day of the year, right, when people, maybe if they're not the most extroverted or most vocal about their love, is it gives them a socially accepted way to finally admit it, right, to come out and say it, I love you, right? And we joke a lot about the romantic relationships where the woman's like, you never tell me you love me. And the guy's like, I said it to you when I married you 20 years ago and I still mean it, right? You know,
and I get that. I'm not making fun of that mentality. But
for kids, I don't know. I personally try to verbalize my love every day. And I do it in our leave-taking ritual that I do with my kids. There's a song, I may have mentioned this before in the show, there's a song by Matthew West called More. And the chorus is, I love you more than the sun and the stars that I taught how to shine. And what I do is when my kids get out of the car and they're taking their leave of me, hey, Dad, I'm going to school. And I say, hey, have a good day. And they'll look at me. I'll say, hey, I love you. And they'll say, I love you more. And I'll say, than the stars. And they'll say, the sun and the stars that I taught her. And we kind of sing it back and forth to each other as we're walking away. But I've determined a long time ago that I want to verbalize my love, because my kids should see it in how I provide for the family and how I care for them and treat them and treat their mother. But I've often said that nonverbal communication, although it's very strong, it forms, depending on who you talk to, between 60 and 90% of our actual communication. So we do have to behave well and show how we love through caring behavior. But if you don't contextualize it, nonverbal behavior can really become misconstrued, and so verbalizing our love, even in those moments where we're correcting our kids. Trey, I don't know if you've seen this before or how it plays out in your family, but I had a great experience the other day with Ethan. I had to get up early to do some special stuff in the morning, and so I got up at about 5:30, and for some reason Ethan, he doesn't normally wake up, but he was awake, and he said, Dad, I can't go back to sleep. And I said, okay, well, I'll be back in a couple hours in time to wake everyone up and get everyone ready for school, but I said, I want you to try and get some more sleep. You guys have a late start today because of the weather, so you can get some more sleep in, and so try to get some sleep, and if you can't go to sleep, that's fine, but I don't want you playing on electronics. Because in my head, I know when he plays on electronics, he gets focused, and that's all he wants to do, and that's not a good way to start, since we've got to have him tear away from those and go to school. So I said, don't play on electronics. And he said, yes, sir. So then I left the house and took care of stuff. When I came back at about 7 o'clock, I was needing to kind of get cleaned up and get ready for my actual work day, and I walked past his room, and guess what he was doing?
I'm going to bet he's playing video games.
He was playing video games on his laptop. He was playing Minecraft, and I looked in his room and I said, Ethan, that is not what I asked you to do. And he said, I'm sorry, Dad. And then I went around getting cleaned up, brushed my hair, brushed my teeth, got dressed to go to work, and as I was putting on my shoes, Ethan comes out and he says, hey, Dad, I know you didn't say this, but you probably think that because I didn't listen to you that I should be restricted and not have electronics for the rest of the day. And now remember, the only thing I'd said was, that's not what I asked you to do. Yeah. And he came out and I said, now Ethan, why do you think I'd say that? I said, if you were me and you were the dad, what would you say to you? He said, I don't know. I said, well, what do you think you should do? He said, well, probably not have electronics for the rest of the day. I said, well, you realize that if I say that to you, it's not because I'm trying to punish you, because I don't like for you to have good stuff or play on your electronics that you worked hard to get. It's because I want you to be able to make good decisions. And this would be a reminder of, hey, I made a poor decision because I chose to disobey and to not do what I was told to do. And he said, yeah, I said, this is actually me loving you because I want to respect your choices, and choices have consequences, right? He says, yeah, I understand. And so there's an example of even in correcting him, I mean, I didn't really have to correct him. He was self-correcting, actually. But but even then, I wanted to verbalize that, hey, you know, this consequence is one, I'm glad that he was imposing it on himself. I never once said the word, don't play in your electronics, but he didn't for the rest of the day. But what I did say to him was, hey, this is a consequence, and I'm saying this, or I'm responding this way because I love you. Right, it's that setting limits stuff. So verbalizing your love and contextualizing even moments of correction, I think, is really, really important.
You know, I think the V part of all of this, the verbalizing issue, is so intrinsically important. I mean, it's so just at the core of everything. It's so valuable because, you know, we talk a lot when we talk about love. We say the best kind of love is unconditional love. And to me, the verbalizing part, when done under the right motivation, I'm going to add that segue to almost every single one of these. when it's done under the right motivation, verbalizing is that component of love that can be the most powerful in reminding our kids that it's unconditional. It's that, you know, when they hear it from us constantly. Man, I sure do love you. I sure do love you guys. You guys are so wonderful, right? And I'm not talking about. I'm so glad you brought this up, because I'm not talking about when they're doing things and they're sweet and wonderful to each other and we're all lovey fluffy, you know, fluffy unicorn farts and bowls of cherries, right? And I'm not talking about just when it's that. I'm talking about when things are rotten and they've been difficult and they are not much fun. That verbalizing thing. See, I mean, I think a lot of times Valentine's Day only cuts a sliver of that love piece out.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. We over-focus on the warm joys and the rainbows that are, you know, coming out of people's eyeballs and stuff like that. And don't get me, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a component of love as well. But we forget about, what about those dark times, the times that aren't very fun, those times where we want to just punch them in the face. You know what I'm saying? And they do those things and they rebel and they push and they rub up against us and are abrasive or whatever else. You know, love is involved in those decisions as well. And love is involved in the not devaluing, as you said earlier.
That's
with
right.
that definition you used. It was so good. And verbalizing is so important because, you know, even amidst the non-Valentine's-y type days and feelings and emotions, kids need to know that there is nothing that you can do to change how much that I love you and how much I care for you. Or substituting in what you said earlier, there is nothing that you can ever do or say or any way that you can ever be that will put me into a position to where I am going to stop valuing you and begin devaluing you. Now, that's a big statement for a parent to say. Because it is really easy for us to stop loving a kiddo. And I know that sounds horrible.
Yeah,
right in the middle of a moment, whenever we make that decision to devalue them and treat them like an object and yell
that's
and scream
unloving behavior,
and all
yeah.
that is, right. You know, that, I mean, we make those choices. And so getting to that point to where we can say, you know, amidst all your mess and amidst all your dark stuff right now, I can still choose to see you as an object and understand you and empathize. And put it into a position to where even if we need to set limits, we talked about the L out of all of this, even if we've got to set limits, I can do it from a place like you were talking about earlier in your story. I can do it from a place that's where I care about you, not where it's about me adding something painful so you'll be afraid of me to stop doing it.
That's very well worded, Trey. You know, as you were saying that about when our kids are misbehaving and making poor choices, you know, I've heard the phrase before that that when a child is acting most unlovable is when they need the most love.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So that's a great thing to remember. So setting loving limits, observing our kids, verbalizing our love. The E in the word love in this acrostic is for, and this is my favorite, Trey.
Is
for enjoying our children,
yeah.
right? I work with parents all the time who, by the time they come see me in a counseling framework, it's because they're exasperated. They're they're at the end of their rope. They've tried everything they can think of, and they'll say, "I love my kid." With that word of love, you know, In my head I love my kid, but right now I just don't like him very much. I'm so frustrated with him. I don't, you know, I'm angry. I'm upset. I'm hurt by my kid, and we're so caught up with those uncomfortable emotions that as a parent it's been so long since they've enjoyed their children that parenting is not an enjoyable experience. And
yeah.
Trey, my heart grieves at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Parenting should be enjoyed. Not that there's not challenges. Not that there's moments that we do want to pull our hair out and everything. But the best part of parenting is when we're doing things the way we ought to be doing and we can enjoy our kids, when we can joke with them and laugh with them and play with them and be able to tell them how awesome they are and how much we enjoy being around them and spending time with them and things like that. When our kids are made to feel by our behaviors and our word choices and things like that when we get frustrated, when they feel like they're a burden or a disappointment to our lives, they start to see themselves as being unworthy of love or being broken or defective somehow, right?
Yeah.
And so I see kids all the time that that they feel like they're not living up to the expectations of their parents, expectations that are never verbalized. They just pick them up by the way their parents behave toward them, right?
Yeah.
So I think it means sometimes getting out of our adultness and being able to laugh at ourselves and get down on the floor and wrestle with our kids and play the games that that are childish and mundane to us. Like, you know, I gave myself big props. I hate Monopoly. I love playing board games. Monopoly is my least favorite. And someone somewhere gave my horse loving child a copy of Horseopoly. And one day they said, "Hey, Dad, you want to play a game?" And I was in that mood of, "Yeah, let's play a game." And they said, "Horseopoly." And I thought, "Don't." But what I played it with them, right? And we had a great time with it because in that moment I was able to put all that stuff aside and I was able to enjoy not the game, but enjoy my kids, enjoy spending time with them, and enjoy them enjoying me.
You know, this one's such a difficult one. But first off, did I cut you off?
No, we're done.
Yeah. I've gotten in trouble twice today by my wife because I have been cutting people off today. So anyway, I've got to be real careful. But anyway, I was thinking about this mentality of E for enjoying our kids. I think most of us have a tendency when we're not careful, we let ourselves slide into a place of complacency in parenting to where we tolerate our children. And we tolerate what the behaviors that they're doing, and we tolerate the things that they're doing, and we keep ourselves in a position to where we are just active enough to be involved with them, not punch them in the face, not kill them, and at least make sure they graduate high school, right?
You know,
get them out of the house without them dying. And I think that is such. I'm going to say this may come out more harsh than I mean for it to. I think that is such a waste. That is such a waste of time with kids in the home because we have definitively moved our family from a family of tolerance into we enjoy our children. We enjoy being around them. There's a lady that I absolutely love. Her name is Dr. Sharon Sherkat, and I've been following her stuff, Create Happy Kids, for years. And but she commented on the Family Podcast Network, which is kind of one of those honors that big people in the parenting names are commenting on your stuff. Mm-hmm. And but I remember what there's tons of people out there that do this parenting crap, and I mean there's tons of people out there that do speaking and gay all that other junk. But occasionally a couple of them will pop a little star, and I'm like, this is impressive. But I remember what caught my attention was her mission was helping you like the kids that you love so much.
And that's a great way to say it.
I think that's so wonderful. But that's what we're talking about. Here is it possible to put ourselves into a position with our children to where we don't just tolerate them or we don't just help them survive, where we look forward to being around them. I'm not saying that you need to be around them all the time and love and look forward to them. I'm not saying that you don't reach a critical mass where you've kind of had enough. Sure, absolutely you get to those points. But what we're talking about is more often than not, can you enjoy your children and look forward to being around them? Because kids need that. And let me tell you, they can smell it. They can smell it in a parent that doesn't really like being around them. Mm-hmm. They can tell. And you say, well, I still love them, even if I don't. Do they still? Yeah, no, they can tell. Kids have an inherent built-in crapdar that they can tell whenever we feel disappointed, when we're upset, when we're grumpy, and we're resistant to them. And let me tell you, that can set kids up for an emotional mess later.
And when we realize that those behaviors and those attitudes are devaluing behaviors, and we remember that definition, I'm going to refuse to devalue my kid. Mm-hmm. And so, sometimes I have to call myself out, Trey. I have to say, what I want to do right now is yell, but I don't want to be a yelling dad. What I need from you right now is this, because I'm feeling frustrated right now, and I don't want to be frustrated at you. I want to tell you, this morning's gotten off to a rocky start, and I want to be able to drop you off at school and say, man, thanks for a great morning. And I don't think that can happen right now because I'm so frustrated. So how can you help me? So I own my own feelings, but then I say, I refuse to devalue you. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to make you feel bad about this, but I am going to hold you responsible.
Well, this one creates a lot of problems for parents because, like, Trey, I don't enjoy my kid. So what? How do I get my kid to where they're enjoyable? And the answer is, it's just like anything else. You got to teach them. You got to teach a kid. And a lot of times, because we're resistant to open ourselves up, because we're resistant to really connect with our kid emotionally, then what will happen is that we don't develop that venue to teach. And so what happens is eventually a kid will begin looking for that negative attention like we talked about earlier, and they fight and they vie for that. And it does nothing in most cases but help reinforce that if you want any kind of attention, you've got to be a butt. You've got to be horrible. Well, what kind of relationship is that setting up later in life for a kid, right? We're setting them up for very more of the very exact same thing that we say that we don't want. And so in a lot of cases, yeah, there he is. It just kind of starts it right back over. And so how do we teach our kids to be enjoyable? Well, number one, we've got to learn to be enjoyable ourselves, and we've got to model that for our kids. And let's be honest, sometimes we are not enjoyable people to be around.
Right.
But then we also have to, operating within that ability where we are not, we are valuing them, we are not devaluing them, running with that mm-hmm. you know, that definition you used earlier. Whenever we can get to that point, we can actually teach our kids, hey, sweetie, you are not much fun right now. This is how, you know, I'm experiencing, this is how my brother and sister are experiencing this. Let's talk about a better way that we can do this. And we have to show them how to be enjoyable people to be around.
Well, Trey, one of the reasons I love this podcast is not only do I learn things from it, but I just enjoy being able to think warm, fuzzy thoughts about my kiddos and about the parenting experience and having a partner that not only has a podcast partner that has a similar vision and valuing our friendship. So I want to take this time not only to wish you a happy birthday, but also let you know how much I appreciate you and value as a friend, as a parent, as a mentor, and just say thanks. And I love you, man.
Oh, shucks. I appreciate it. I love you too, brother.
Well, and this whole parenting thing is tough enough to do, and I know there's parents out there that are doing it solo, and I got a lot of respect for you guys because I think that single parenting is a misnomer. It ought to be called like double or triple parenting because it's that much tougher. But I want to just give a shout out. I'm real thankful for my partner in love, my wife Amelia, because I wouldn't be a dad without her. First of all, so I wouldn't be dad to these wonderful kiddos that I have. But more importantly, she helps me be a better father and a better man. And so for Valentine's Day, I am incredibly blessed. And so this is going to go out over the interwebs, and I want people to hear and know that I love my wife. And so happy Valentine's Day, sweetie.
So you know what I'm going to do when we get done recording this?
What's that?
So my wife hasn't been feeling well, right? So I've got to get a little quieter. She can hear me through the walls here in my studio. But you know, so when I get done here, what I'm going to do is, if she's asleep, I've actually got all of her roses and cool stuff sitting in the car. Ooh. And I'm going to set that up. I'll have it ready so that when she wakes up in the morning, boom, there it shall be.
Pretty sweet stuff, man. So all of you moms and dads out there in Radio Land or podcast, this isn't Radio Land, it's Podcast Land. I hope that you guys have a fantastic Valentine's Day and that you're able to love, to limit, observe, vocalize your love, and enjoy your kids on this Valentine's Day. Create some ritual to show them how much you care about them, that they're loved and valued, and if nothing else, if your day turns out to be great, that's fantastic. If it turns out to be horrible, that's a shame. But if nothing else, come back next week because we're going to have another dose of the Real Family Guys podcast.
See you guys next week.